right there. Okay, what is the first thing a business owner needs to do if he or she expects to seek a loan in the near future?
Well, the first thing you need to do, if you are not buying an established business, mm-hmm. is you need to put together a business plan.
Okay.
The business plans can be basically talking about what type of business you're looking to start, what your costs are going to be, what your borrowing needs are going to be, what you're going to produce. Is it a service? Is it a product? What's your clientele going to be? What you anticipated income and expense is going to be, things of that nature. In Pennsylvania, and I don't know if all states have mm-hmm. this, but in Pennsylvania, we have the small business development centers.
Okay.
Bucknell has a small business development
right.
center. They are funded by the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
They are designed to give people who are looking to buy a business or start a business, they're looking to help them with business plans and what to do in order to go hopefully make them bankable. So we always recommend that people go to the small business centers. I believe they'll do up to 40 hours of work mm-hmm. for a prospective entrepreneur,
all right.
free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
Over and above that, I think they have some nominal charges.
Yes, minimum fees.
But it's very minimal.
Right.
So, you know, I have a lot of people who say, I'll go to an accountant or I'll go to an attorney.
Uh-huh.
I say, go to the small business center. It's free.
Right.
They're going to, you know, if we get into a point where we need to get into that detailed of legal or financial documentation, mm-hmm. we'll deal with that later. Let's just, you know, why spend the money to find out if you're bankable?
Oh, wow, that's good advice.
So that's what we try to do. Basically, then, you know, when you do your business plan, you look at what your strengths are,
mm-hmm.
you look at what your weaknesses are, you right. try to shore up your weaknesses. Your strengths speak for themselves.
That's right.
So that's typically what I would tell. If somebody said to me, hey, I want to start my own business, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
That's typically what I would tell somebody to do.
Oh, I see. And are there differences in documentation in the application process from the banks and business perspective between new and established businesses?
Okay. When you say established, is this someone who's buying an established business?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yes.
So someone's coming in, they're starting a new business, or they're buying an established
uh-huh,
business.
Right.
Okay. There really isn't, other than the fact that if you're buying an established business,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to be quite as elaborate on your business plan.
I see.
Because it's an established business,
mm-hmm.
we know pretty much what the clientele is that the existing owner is working
right.
with. We know a lot of the information along those lines. If it's a new business, we need to find out what it is you plan to do. What we normally look at here is doing a business plan, but putting in, are you going to change things?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that existing owner does. Are you going to modify that? Are you going to stay with that template? You're going to go with something different. You're going to modify. What are you going to change? The other nice advantage you have in
mm-hmm.
buying an established business is you have historical financial
That's
information.
Right.
You know, it's sad to say, but, you know, when you're starting a business, everybody's going to ask for projections.
Right.
What are your income expense projections for 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Basically, they're not worth, to a banker,
uh-huh.
they're technically not worth the paper they're written on.
Okay.
What they are there to do, and what a business plan is there to do in many cases, is to show us if you've done your homework.
Okay.
If you know what you want to do.
Okay, your industry.
Okay. It basically shows us if you've got some expertise or if you've got the desire.
Okay.
I'll give you a prime example. I had a guy come in to me one time, wanted to buy a bar. Everybody wants to buy a bar.
Mm-hmm.
People
right.
come in, they're going to drink. If you know, it's, I call it the field of dreams business. If you buy it, they will come. Okay.
Right.
So the guy wanted to buy a bar, and it had been closed for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and he's buying the property and the liquor license, and he does his business plan, but he did it all by himself.
Okay.
And he brings his business plan in, and I said to him, are you going to serve cold beer? He said, yeah. You have lights? He said, yeah. I said, okay. You're going to have a stove? You're going to have a cash register? He said, yeah. I said, okay. I said, you don't have anything in your business plan showing me an expense for utilities.
That's right.
You don't have anything for electricity, for gas, for sewer and water, for what,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Those little details.
Those things are the things that tell us, did somebody do their homework?
I see.
Okay. But it also gives us an opportunity. We can also go in and compare projections to similar sized businesses.
Okay,
and see how things shake out. So it does give us a little bit. It does give us a little bit of information. But that would be the main thing. The business plan does not have to be as elaborate.
Uh-huh.
And you have some historical financials. I don't ever recommend anybody buying the existing business unless they get at least 2 years financials from the business owner, and usually 3 years. So you can see what this has done over a 3 year period.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. And are personal guarantees automatic with some types of loans?
Pretty much.
These are
what we basically look at is whether if you were starting a business and you wanted to call it Jose Inc., okay, and you come in and you say, all right, Jose Inc. wants to borrow money. Well, you are the business.
Right.
Okay? Or you or your wife.
Mm-hmm.
You might have family members involved or another partner. But what we typically do is we typically say to owners of a business,
okay,
shareholders or members of an LLC or partners, if you've got an interest of 20%
mm-hmm.
or greater in this business, we need you to put your name behind the business.
Oh, I see.
Because the case in point is this. We need to, it's too easy today for people to just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So if we give a loan to a person for the business and they don't have personal assets involved, they don't have their personal signature involved, and it starts going bad, they can just say, and walk away. So a lot of times we say, we're here to help you in business.
Okay.
But if you're not willing to put your name behind your business, why should we lend you the money?
Yeah.
So it's a commitment.
Right.
It's establishing a commitment. So we typically require personal guarantees because and all the money from the business flows down naturally pretty much to the individuals.
Right. And makes sense to share the risk, of course.
Right, absolutely. Right. We're not here to put you in business, we're here to help you get in business. But you have to have some, the adage is you have to have some skin in the game.
I see. Yeah.
It's easy when you don't have any skin in the game.
Yeah,
because you have nothing to lose. You know.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to go over to the next one.
Okay.
And say, does business experience factor into the risk equation?
Yeah, it does. If your background was...
For example, I'm an engineer.
Okay.
And I'm planning in the future to start a restaurant.
Okay. All right, you're an engineer, you're going to start a restaurant. I'm going to sit here and say, what experience do you have running a restaurant?
Well, cooking in my home and working as a server in a restaurant and a little management in there.
Okay.
But not the full responsibility.
But see, that's where we're going to look at.
Mm-hmm.
The serving, okay, that might be a little bit of a head. What I'm looking at is, what do you know about ordering? What do you know about your inventory? What do you know about how much of this do you need? How much of that do you need?
Mm-hmm.
What are our costs? And a little bit of management, yes. Then, you've got some experience. Naturally, somebody who has some experience in that field, that goes a long way to carrying some weight as to whether or not they're going to have the expertise.
And that brings me another question. For example, if I don't have the expertise that you're looking for, but I have a team member in my management team or a partnership, that counts?
Sure, we'll look at that.
Oh, okay.
Because what we're going to look at is we're going to look at your business, and though we look at the business being predominantly you, you do have a team of people that work for you. Okay, and we're going to look at what experience those people have, and what you can garner from them, what they can garner from you in order to make it a stronger business organization. So, yes, we do look at those things.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it says, do you work with SBA loans too? Are there third parties other than SBA which can be brought in to serve as a guarantor of a loan not associated with the borrower or his business prior to the loan?
There are other agencies. The SBA is naturally the biggest. But there's also the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
They also guarantee loans, and they're not just farm loans.
Mm-hmm.
They actually guarantee business loans now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So looking into that with the USDA. Then you get into regional, state, and local economic development groups.
Okay.
CEDACOG,
mm-hmm.
which is headquartered for these couple of counties here in central Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
is a state-run economic development group. They help people to find funding. They help people to maybe get some grants or things of that nature that the general public just doesn't really always know are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
We have, I know, and I've done some loans for some businesses in Clinton County, which is where I live, where
mm-hmm.
we have, the county has a revolving loan fund.
Okay.
The city has a revolving loan fund. If you're going to do something with a business and you're going to employ people, let's say, you know, what we did was basically at a previous bank, I did a loan for the acquisition of a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what we did was the bank took 50%
okay.
of the loan, which worked out very well for us.
Mm-hmm.
Then 20% came from CEDACOG. They gave them a loan, a very low interest rate loan from CEDACOG, which
okay.
is state regional government. Then the county came in and gave them 15%
mm-hmm.
in county funds because they were going to employ people. And then the city came in and gave them 15% in city funds because they were going to upgrade the building and make the building look nicer.
Okay.
So what ended up happening was they ended up getting a couple hundred thousand dollars from the bank
mm-hmm.
at, say, 6-7%, which was the going rate at that time. But then they ended up getting some money from these other organizations
mm-hmm.
that are funded by the government, who their interest rate was probably all total, you know, round, you know, averaged out
mm-hmm.
around 3-3.5%.
Right.
So, but had they not gone to CEDACOG, had they not gone to the county revolving loan fund or to the city revolving loan fund, they would have never known about that money being out there. So there are groups like that. And
okay.
that's why anybody who's like, if you're going to start a business here
mm-hmm.
in Union County,
right.
you want to check what, you want to talk to CEDACOG. You want to talk to the Union County Industrial Development Authority.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk to, if you're going to do it in Lewisburg, you want to talk to the city, the city of Lewisburg. You want to say, hey, is there any money out there that can help me out? Grant money. Sometimes they have money that they might say to you, okay, we'll give you $25,000 to renovate your building.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As long as you pay your taxes for the next 10 years,
okay,
you don't have to pay that $25,000 back.
Oh, wow.
Okay? They have things like that, beautification projects, things of that nature. So
okay.
so there are a lot of other options out there. It's just a matter of digging.
Uh-huh.
You know,
and ask questions. And,
now, and the small, and here again, this goes back to the small business development centers.
Right.
They know about all this stuff too.
Okay.
So you can come in and talk to a financial institution, or you can go talk to the small business center. They know about it. And they'll tell you where to go. They can, you know, set appointments for you, things like that.
Right.
So it's a pretty nice thing to have.
Oh, thank you. Now tell me, what are some of the risk factors that anyone seeking a loan can reduce prior to making the loan application?
Well, this is one of those questions that is specific, yet the answer is non-specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less the same types of factors that happen when you are basically starting a loan or you basically are doing your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
There are strengths and there are weaknesses.
Right.
What you basically have to do is we look at what the risk factors are, and you're correct. By making the application, you need to have basically as strong a plan as you can possibly put together.
Okay.
The other thing that you need to have is collateral of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You need to have good credit.
Okay.
And you need to have capital. Now, the situation that a lot of small business people run into, and I've seen more small businesses fail
mm-hmm.
because of this, they take everything they own.
Right.
Their house, land, everything they own, they got the business,
mm-hmm.
the equipment for the business that they're going to be starting, they take all their cash,
okay.
they put it all down to meet the 20 or 25% requirement, whatever it may be, depending on the type of loan it is.
Mm-hmm.
They get everything and they say, okay, now we're ready to open our doors.
Okay.
And they're ready to open the doors and nobody comes in.
Yeah.
And it takes them two, three, four weeks, 5 weeks to get some people starting to trickle in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a couple of months and they've got a little bit of traffic.
Right.
What happens is so many times, and that's where capital comes into play. They
okay.
put everything they have into getting the doors open. Just because you open the doors does not mean people
mm-hmm.
are going to come flooding in. Doesn't mean you're going to start doing $5,000 a week. You may only do $500. That's why most businesses, 50% of all businesses
mm-hmm.
that start
okay.
fail in the first year.
I see.
50% of the businesses that survive the first year
mm-hmm.
fail in the second year.
Okay.
So what you basically have is, if you started, we started 100 businesses in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, we're going to have maybe 25 of
right.
them. Okay. So that's where we all look to see if you are capitalized.
Okay.
If you have the money, because we're going to sit there and say, if you don't meet these projections, how are you going to pay your debt?
That's right.
How are you going to pay your vendors?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you need to have capital in reserve in the event that, you know, you're not rolling
okay.
in the dough from day one. That's the, one of the biggest factors that we run into is they put everything into getting the doors open, then they have no capital to run it until the business starts making money.
Okay. That confirms what I've read.
Yeah.
Another question. Is it wise to deal with banks one at a time, or is a shotgun approach better if you don't have an established relationship with a
yeah.
bank?
If you don't have an established relationship,
mm-hmm.
I don't personally see anything wrong with dealing with several
right.
banks. You don't necessarily want to be out there with 8 or 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
But what you want to do is go out and talk to 8 or 9 of them.
Yeah.
Talk to them. And then make a decision on a couple, 2 or 3, that you're going to pursue your request through. Because as loyalty is not a big factor anymore.
I see.
It used to be a major factor.
Uh-huh.
It's not. Because consumers want the highest rate on their deposits and the lowest rate on their loans.
Right.
Okay, and they can always find somebody
willing
who's
going
to give them a rate that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So what you end up doing is it does a couple of things. Even if you have a relationship with a bank, it helps to keep that bank's pencil sharper, so to speak.
Of course.
You know, if I know that you're talking to me and only me, and I'm going, man, he's not going anywhere. He's been with us for 15 years. So I could probably do this at 5.5%, but he's not going anywhere. I'll do it at 6.
Okay.
Whereas another bank might say to you, well, I'll do it at 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know you're talking to other people. And if you're a good banker, you know what the market's doing.
Right.
So you sit back and you say, I better give that to him at 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps the pencil sharper. It's almost like how we take advantage or take for granted the things that we have.
Okay.
We have it, we want it, it's the greatest thing in the world when we get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we treat it so well.
Oh, I see.
And after a year, we go, where is that thing? What
That's
did
right.
I do with that thing?
I see.
Same thing with a client. We bankers have a tendency, because we're always looking for new business.
Mm-hmm.
The
right.
next new customer is our cool guy.
Of course.
Or our cool girl. So we get you, and you're making your payments,
mm-hmm.
and you're coming in and depositing, and you're talking to the tellers every day, and you wave at me as you go by, and we've got you.
Right.
And now we're out looking for other people, and we tend to take you for granted.
That's right.
So sometimes you need to shop it around.
I see.
But so I would say, especially in this day and age,
mm-hmm.
where credit is tight, you
yeah.
want to make sure you're out there possibly getting the best deal you can.
I see.
You know.
And speaking of credit, how do credit cards, even those without a balance, impact a loan application?
Well, they impact it a lot.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I've got a lot. It's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people that have said to me, well, I got these so that I could have a credit history. Okay, that's fine. But here's the situation. I look at your business plan. And I look and see what you are intending to bring in. I look at what your wife is making in her job. And we know you have that available for debt service.
Okay.
Okay? And then we look and we see that you've got 6 credit cards with a $10,000 credit limit on each one of them. Now, you have nothing outstanding on any of them. That's great. You don't owe anything. But let's say I give you your loan today, and things aren't, and you start your business, and things aren't going well, and you got to pay the bills. You say, I don't have any cash. I'll pay my bills with my credit cards. All of a sudden, now, a year from now, we come back and we look at the financials, and you've got $58,000 in unsecured credit because you had to pay the bills with that. So what we do is we look at credit cards and say, you may have $60,000 with a zero balance.
Okay.
But when I'm calculating your cash flow, I'm calculating your cash flow based on you have a $60,000 balance. I need to see that you can afford, if you tap all those credit cards out to the max, I got to be assured that you can afford to pay for them.
Right.
Okay? If I can't be assured of that, then I've got to close them. I've got to tell you, you can't have those credit cards.
I see.
You know? And that's a hard concept for a lot of people to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having that problem with business couple right now. They want to consolidate all their business debts into one loan. And I'm willing to do that for them. But I said to them, they've got $100,000 in credit limits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm taking the majority of that and paying it off in a loan. But I told them, we're closing out all the credit cards but one.
Okay.
Now, I'm being pretty generous because I'm letting them keep a credit card open that has a credit limit of $25,000.
I see.
Okay? And it will have a $0 amount on it. They're upset. They're telling me, well, $25,000 is not enough. I said, well, why? But you're consolidating.
Right.
If you consolidate, the last thing you want to do is charge these back up. Because then 2 years from now, you've paid this $100,000 down to $97,000, and you've got another $100,000 out here outstanding. They're not grasping that.
And
they're angry at me because I'm making them close their credit accounts. But sometimes in a banker's position we do things that our borrowers may not like, but we're trying to do what's best for them.
Right.
So that's how we look at credit. We have to look at it even though it has no balance on it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's available to you, we have to look at it as if it is fully advanced.
I see. Okay, thank you. Let me ask this. If an applicant is turned down for a loan, how can he or she regroup and come back to try again? For example, how long should he or she wait, and what actions do they need to take to improve the application?
There's no specific time frame.
Okay.
Okay. Commercial lending is a little bit different. Business lending is a little bit different from consumer lending.
I see.
If a financial institution, if you come in and you apply for a mortgage, a home equity loan, a car loan, a personal loan from a financial institution, when they decline you, they have to give you a letter.
Yeah.
Which tells you, you were declined for the following reasons.
Okay.
You have 30 days to address that letter, explain your explanations for these things, and they must reconsider the loan.
Okay.
Okay. On the commercial side, we're not regulated like the consumer is.
I see.
We don't have to do that.
Okay.
Typically, what we'll do is we'll say, yeah, I can't do the loan because of the following thing. If someone's going to deny your request, okay, you want to make sure you get it in writing from them. And you are entitled to do so. What we would typically do is if someone said to me, okay, I want a decline letter. I said, fine, I'd do a letter and it would say, we're declining your loan request. You have 30 days to send us a letter asking us for specific reasons and we'll give them to you. Okay. If they don't ask in 30 days, we don't have to give it to them. Okay. But let's say you do ask and I say to you, here's the specific reasons. That then allows you to look at your business plan, look at how you're structuring things, strengthen up your weaknesses.
Okay.
Okay. So that where you know what your strengths are because we didn't decline you for those. We declined you for the weaknesses.
Okay.
If you're able to strengthen them, maybe bring in a partner, maybe bring in a venture capital, something like that. You can come back to us then, and we can take a look at it.
Okay.
Okay. So we're willing to do that. Do banks? I would say 8 times out of 10,
okay,
somebody brings a loan back, even though they've shorted up.
Mm-hmm.
We probably still don't do it.
I see.
What I've seen happen more than not is bank A declines you and you find out why.
Okay.
You shore everything up and then you go to bank B with your request.
Okay.
Okay. And try it there. That's what I've seen work. But you can go back to the same financial institution.
Okay, I see.
You know, a lot of it depends on the loan officer you're dealing with. Some of them say, I looked at it, and I don't care if you shore it up, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones, like, I'll take a look at things, and if it's, you know, you make some changes and it makes sense.
I could consider.
Yeah. So there's no time frame on that.
Oh, okay.
Okay? You do have, if they do not give you specific reasons, you do have 30, you only have 30 days
to ask for
to send them a letter back saying, I want the specific reasons.
I see.
I would always get the specific reasons because, number one, if you exonerate, if they give you five reasons and you exonerate four of those reasons, they can't use those on you again.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's a way to improve your...
It's a way to improve your package.
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Great. And a couple of questions more out of the this. If I come to your bank and ask for a loan, what are the advantages that you have against other competitors, for example, and other banks? What would you tell me?
Well, and here is the difference between a credit union and a bank.
Okay.
Banks are privately held companies where they have private shareholders, or they're a publicly traded company. Okay. So, but the bottom line is profitability. Because they want their shareholders to make money. Okay? Where credit unions and what we call state mutual savings banks, where we have an advantage is we don't have shareholders. Our shareholders, in essence, are our customers.
Right.
Okay? Now, you don't get a dividend, a stock dividend, or anything like that. But what you get is... We're able to take, because we're a not-for-profit, we are a not-for-profit organization.
Right.
Meaning we're not here to make money. Well, but we do make money. But what we do is we plow that money back to our members in the form of hopefully paying a little bit extra interest on deposits, hopefully a little lower interest on loans, less fees, things of that nature. I think we're pretty competitive rate-wise with the financial institutions we deal with. I think what you will find out is that we are much easier to deal with and we are have far less fees associated with our loans than do the commercial banks. What we do is where a commercial bank will charge you 2 or 3% as a quote origination fee. We charge you for basically what we're doing. We charge you a fee for credit underwriting. We charge you a fee for document preparation, but we charge you. And is there a little profit in there? Yes, there is, but it's it's a little bit. So I think what you'll find out is we're easier to get along with. We are a little bit more affable in dealing with structuring. You know, the bank's pretty much what I used to call it when I was and I spent 25 years in banking before I came to a credit union. In banking, I called it cookie cutter banking. You'd come in and you'd ask for a loan, and I'd say, here it is. Take it or leave it.
Right.
Now, it's not really what you want. It's not really what's good for you, but it's what I'm offering you.
Okay.
And I don't really care whether you take it or not, because I've got two people sitting outside, two other businessmen sitting outside. One of them will take it. Okay, so do you want this or don't you want this?
Okay.
So it was cookie cutter banking. Fit the business into the lender's box.
I see.
Where over on the credit union side, we have a box also. But we try to extend our box a little bit in order to try to fit the box to what you need. It requires the borrower to be negotiable.
Right.
And it requires the lender to be negotiable. But usually we can come up with a fair product, a fair loan that you can live with, that we can live with.
I see.
So I think that's one of the things that we work with a little bit better than some of the other financial institutions, because we're a not-for-profit as opposed to them being all profit related.
Okay. And my last question. For example, as I told you, if I want to start a business.
Right.
And I start my business plan.
Right.
Is there any part in the business plan that you're going to look at with more attention, or everything counts? What do you say? Numbers, description, people?
It depends on what kind of business it is.
Okay.
If we're looking at a restaurant type business, mm-hmm. I'm going to look at more or less the business plan relatively equally.
Okay.
Because we all know what restaurants yeah. are here. They serve food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you told me you were coming out here and you were going to start an environmental engineering business.
Okay.
Okay. Now we're getting into something that's not your run-of-the-mill business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to look at certain portions of your business plan a lot more intensely than we would for the rest. I mean, the restaurant is basically, who do you think your clientele is? Where are you located at? Do you have good ingress and egress? What are you serving?
Yeah.
Okay, and then basically from that point is, if you prepare, is your facility clean? Do you make a good presentation?
Mm-hmm.
Do you serve good food?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're looking at the whole ball of wax pretty much evenly. You come out and say, I'm going to start an environmental engineering firm. I'm like, well, okay, I got to see these numbers. And I've got to go look at resources that I have to see what do environmental engineering firms do.
Uh-huh.
You know, you may, a typical environmental engineering firm may do 10 things. Your business plan may tell me you're only going to do 5 of them. So I can't look at numbers for an environmental engineering firm the size mm-hmm. you're talking about. And say, well, it's going to do all these things, and these are what the numbers are going to be. They're only going to do half of this. So we have resources that we use. So it depends on the type of business it is. Naturally, the less mainstream mm-hmm. or the more complex the business is, the more we're going to look at certain areas of the business plan as opposed to just looking at the business plan in general. You know, because here again, you're an educated man. Okay,
I tried to say so, but
I'm figuring that you, if you started a restaurant, you'd probably pretty much know what you were doing,
right?
Okay, and that's just because I'm familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
You come in and say I'm starting an environmental engineering firm, I'm going like, oh,
yeah,
I gotta get up to speed on this.
Okay.
So you know, naturally, it's one of those types of things. But that's what we're looking at, and we're basically looking to see how motivated people are. And one thing that I didn't put in here that I always say to people, mm-hmm. I had somebody who came to me and he said, I'm tired of working for a paycheck. I want my own place. I want my own business. I want my, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. You want to live the American dream?
They say,
absolutely. And I say, are you ready to work 365 days a year, 24 hours a day,
right?
7 days a week? You just can't say, you know what? I ain't going in this week.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're dealing with a cash business.
Yeah.
Non-management in the cash business doesn't work. For example, I had a friend who bought a business.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bar and a restaurant.
Okay.
We had 3 years' financials on it. We looked at it. The financials were good. And we said, okay. And he bought it. In the first year, him being there every day.
Okay, I see.
Sales went up 5%.
Uh-huh.
Bottom line revenue went up 45%.
Okay.
That's because the manager, who was taking care of things for the previous owner,
mm-hmm.
was ordering 10 cases of booze. 2 cases of booze was going in his trunk.
Oh, wow.
8 cases of booze was going in the bar because the owner was never there.
Right.
The owner didn't know what was going on. So especially in a cash business, absentee management does not work. So that's why I try to tell people, you've got to understand, if you go home and it's 8:30 and there's a problem in your business.
Yeah.
Your manager who's there or your employees, they're calling you.
Right.
You're going to have to get up and go in.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the things I tell people. It's great that you want to do this, mm-hmm. but you have to be committed to it.
Yeah. There's a responsibility along.
Right. There's a lot, you know, I had one guy who looked me dead square in the eye and said, you know, now that you talk about that, the crap I have to take from my boss working 9 to 5 every day isn't so bad.
Yeah.
I said, no, it's
not. In some cases.
I said, plus, does your company give you benefits? Does your company give you health insurance? Yeah. Who's going to give you health insurance when you're...
Yeah, when you're the
you
owner.
Give yourself health insurance. Right. And that's going to cost you $1,000 a month. Start throwing around numbers. So that's one of the things I do. I always make sure that people are motivated to do what they want to do. Because, and there again, here again, this is why having people as guarantors, getting additional collateral,
mm-hmm.
keeping people's feet to the fire is so important, because you get a lot of people, especially in this day and age where people don't want to work.
That's right.
But you get a lot of people who will come in and they want to start their own business. And if they don't have any skin in the game, 6 months, they'll go, heck mm-hmm. with this, and walk away.
Right.
But we tie them up. Say, you want to walk away? Go ahead, walk away. But we got a mortgage on your house. We got a mortgage on all your equipment. You're not going to sell anything. You want to go to work? Go to work. But you're still going to pay us. Mm-hmm. If you don't, we're just going to, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I tell people. People say, oh, you want collateral? I say, look, the last thing I want to do is take your collateral.
That's right.
I'm not a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sell your commercial building. I don't want to sell your equipment. I don't want to sell your house. In the finance world, there's one thing that can go right. You get paid back.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else that happens is bad.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at what's our risk. There's a million things can happen, and they're all bad. And there's one thing that should happen, and it's the only good thing, and that's that we get paid back. So, you know.
That's right.
But from that standpoint, but that's, you know, that's generally what I try to tell people, and I try to counsel people.
Right. It's a good advice in the beginning, you know.
It is.
Do you know what you're going through? So think about it twice. And
it is. Well, and let's be realistic. It's the law of survival. I don't want to spend 2 days, 3 days, 5 days a week putting together a deal for this person, and then the person comes in and says, I changed my mind. I'd rather say they change your mind at the first meet.
That's right.
But so, you know, that's basically the everything in a nutshell.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.